Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie, of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss, of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench. Hello and welcome back to Operation Delta Force December, where we are looking at the series of films that you may or may not have heard of, who knows. And this week we are tackling Operation Delta Force 2 Mayday. It's the one on a ship. And basically it's we're following a Delta Force team as they take on some terrorists. And it's a classic late 90s, early 2000s action series. And they're all available on YouTube.
That's the beauty of this month.
Legally.
Everyone can,
legally.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, legally. Everyone can go and see these movies. And at this time of year, me and Matt like to wind down the year with some schlock, some action. If you're fans of Dirty Dozen December, you'll know exactly the kind of vibe we're going for. Hope you enjoyed last week's chat with Sam. How interesting
Sam
was that?
Sam kicked us off perfectly.
Oh, I know,
he had
right?
a lot of comments exactly. about how enthusiastic he was, and he was a great guest to chat to.
Amazing.
Just his enthusiasm for film in general, and you know, chatting about one that he doesn't talk about too often, was really nice.
That's great.
This one came out in 1998, and I think what we'll do is I'll run through production, and then Rob's going to handle cast, and then we'll chat about the plot of the film and all that good stuff in the MSI.
Yeah.
So as I said, film came out in 1998, and it was directed by Yossi Wayne. He's best known for films like Lethal Ninja, Cybercop 2, Merchant of Death, US Seals. And he'd later actually go on to direct another of the venerable Operation Delta Force series. He directed Operation Delta Force 5, the final installment
Look forward to that, yeah.
And of course, Death Train in 2003. As Sam actually mentioned the other week, the plot for this film, just like the previous one, was pulled together by one of the actual producers. And in this case, it was Danny Lerner. And he provided the story, but he was producer on all five of the films.
Oh, great.
And a lot of the cult movies as well. In recent times, he's actually produced a number of bigger profile pictures, including War Inc., Expendables 2 and 3. Olympus Has Fallen, and an interesting film called Killing Season with John Travolta and Robert De Niro, where they're both veterans of the Bosnian.
Matt has been gunning
have to come
hard.
Together.
So behind the scenes,
looks a weird film.
I must get every month or so. Matt brings this movie up, so in the new year we might have to do it because it just sounds incredible. With the cast
premise is insane. Look it up.
Yeah.
And then the script was actually pulled together by David Sparling, and he also did the scripts for 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Operation Delta Force, but not 5. He also wrote the Merchant of Death and US Seals. So from this, you can kind of see there's a lot of overlap with the guys that are on the
they got their mates, the production their crew, side of things. Their team.
It's it's all within that Millennium Films New Image production company.
Kind of like how Canon used to do it. This is what Sam was saying. It's the same deal.
Exactly. Sam explained it really well last week, didn't he? Cinematography was provided by Peter Belcher, who worked extensively as a camera op and a cinematographer throughout his career. Still working today. He worked as a cinematographer on Merchant of Death, Operation Delta Force 2, this one. He did 2 episodes of CI5, the new CI5 in the late 90s. Yeah.
Christ.
US Seals again, he was cinematographer on that. He was also the cinematographer for Operation Delta Force 5, US Seals 2, and Death Train as well. And he was the camera op on films including Laser Mission, Point of Impact, Cyber Cop, Danger Zone, Operation Delta Force 1, Death Train, and then more recently films like Lord of War, the series Generation Kill, Dread, Mad Max Fury Road, and The Woman King. So he's kind of he's been camera up on some really interesting movies recently. So Operation Delta Force 2 Mayday was filmed in Johannesburg in March-June 1996, released about 18 months later.
They were clearly banging these out, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting them done.
You can see it in the crew lists and the cast. You can see that it's an annual thing where they're knocking these out, and they're bringing a known group of people back to it each time.
And as I mentioned, they had a contract with HBO or something for a set amount of these home premieres, and they're just working to a deadline. Perhaps I can't get to the bottom of it because
there's very little out there on
FA
these films.
FA out there on these movies.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go on Wikipedia, it has it doesn't have individual synopsis for all the films. It just has a list of the films,
and so despite tells you a being lot. Despite
for
being
some reason,
eligible,
it isn't listed on the AFI, Rob. I can't understand
that.
Why.
Despite being eligible for an AFI catalog, it's not on there. It's like the fourth Bible when we do American shows.
It is, yeah. On a good American film, there's always really great information on the AFI. It's slightly better than the BFI in that respect.
I think it is.
Just to round out production side of things, as I mentioned, produced by Millennium Films, and it was distributed by New Image. And you see three individual title cards at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
For New Image and New Image Productions and New Image worldwide and.
There's a great trailer that me and Matt saw as well, which is essentially a selling trailer to sell it to potential buyers. That's an interesting
distributors
thing.
And home video stores and stuff.
I'd have definitely had a rack of these on the shelf. I'd have been knocking these out for $10.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have cleaned
up. Hey, kids, do you want the steelbook of Operation Delta Force 2? Mayday?
It's what I've always wanted for Christmas, Daddy.
Oh, my God.
If you don't buy me, you don't love me.
it's the weekend film everyone needs.
I think we can assume as well that it's probably the same kind of budget that Operation Delta Force 1 had. So probably about
a mil,
1.5 million, probably. But then obviously, if you listen to last week, that gets converted into South African currency. So they're playing with a lot more money overseas than they would have had in the US. So it's a clever model. And it's a model that's still done today.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Massively. So I think that brings us into cast. Now, this week, we were meant to be joined by Michael McGrady, who plays Captain Skip Lang. Unfortunately, he was busy with work, but we carry on regardless here at FOF. So, aforementioned, Michael McGrady, he's been in Ray Donovan, American Crime Story, SEAL Team, at the TV series. He was Rusty Galloway in L.A. Noir, for all you gaming fans out there. An excellent voice role. Then he was Private Floyd in Thin Red Line. If you remember.
Did he make it on screen?
I think he did. Well, it's anyone's guess. He could have been in the back of his head for that. With that,
it's
head,
a meme now. Totally
probably
meme.
Him and Adrian Brody sitting together in the cinema, just leaning in, going,
what the fuck have they done with my role? where am I?
And he was also in What Up as well, the movie that came out after Tombstone.
Oh, he's in that, was he?
He's in that, yeah. Mm, nice. And then we have Robert Pattieri as Sergeant Mac McKinney. He was in Conan, CSI Miami, Babylon 5. Not many credits to his name. Then we had Todd Jensen back again, but he's playing Master Sergeant Lombardi, and he played Hutch in Operation Delta Force 1. Not sure why they recast Hutch, didn't keep him as the same character. We'll never know. This is the beauty of these movies. They do go a bit madcap with the casting.
He comes back again later on, so yeah.
Someone else, yeah.
Right.
He was in Cyborg Cop, one of Sam Furstenberg's movies. Tropical mm-hmm. Heat, another Sam Furstenberg project. CI5, The New Professionals. And he, of course, comes back in Operation Delta Force 5, Random Fire. Then we have Spencer Rochefort as Hutch. He was in 21 Jump Street, Falling Down, Beverly Hills 90210, and Baywatch.
That the Hutch character is still in the film, but they just went bizarre. Fuck it, we'll just change the actor. It's fine.
Yeah, fuck it.
No one's going to notice.
No, no. You know, not until there's a Fighting on Film boys get hold of us.
Right. 20 years later.
But, you know, these are proper, at the time, they were jobbing. You know, that sort of straight to video market is still quite lucrative. Mm-hmm. It's not like it was now. You sign a streaming deal, but back then you could do a lot of these movies in a year and probably make quite a good income off it, I think.
Yeah.
Get some credits on. Then we have Gavin Hood as Sparks. Now, he would reprise his role in next week's Operation Delta Force 3, playing Sparks again. Clear Target.
Oh my God, they kept him as the same character.
He
amazing.
Did, yeah, mad. But he's since gone on.
The continuity manager on that one must have been like... My work here is done.
Yeah, he had his Weetabix in the morning, didn't he? But he's gone on to become a director, and he's actually directed some quite, you know, well-received pictures. So he did Totsi. You remember that? Did the Oscar rounds a few years ago.
Yeah.
X-Men Origin Wolverine.
No way.
Ender's Game and Eye in the Sky, that movie about drones.
Oh, with Alan Rickman and Helen Mirren.
With Alan Rickman, yeah.
Wow.
He also has small roles in Totsi, I think, and Eye in the Sky, if I remember rightly. But no, what an amazing another glow up there. Wow.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and then we have Dale Dye as Captain Housley Lang, Skip Lang's dad. Obviously, you'll remember Dale Dye from when we chatted to him a few months back. Go and listen to that show if you haven't.
If you have not listened to our episode with Dale, go back and listen to it. It's one of my favorite Fighting on Film episodes ever.
Absolutely incredible. Like any war movie fan, any fan of Banner Brothers, any fan of anything like that, our Dale Dye episode is a treat. So obviously, you know, you'll know Dale from Platoon. He's in Mission Impossible, Under Siege 2, Starship Troopers. He played Colonel Sink in Banner Brothers and in the Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway video game. He voiced him. But obviously, we know him best as a military advisor. He was a military advisor on Greyhound, Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan, Tropic Thunder, The Pacific, to name but a few. And of course, he was the military advisor on the much anticipated Masters of the Air, which is coming out in January, I think. They just dropped the trailer.
Yep, 26th,
yeah. You looking forward to it, Matt?
I am. I thought, let's tangent a little bit, but... I liked the trailer. I thought it looked good. I thought a little bit more excited by it than I was the teaser.
Okay. But
we'll see. We'll see.
I'm on the fence still.
Hmm.
I'm on the fence. I've got this weird thing where TV and streaming have come on massively since the Pacific and Band of Brothers came out. I'm not saying this is going to be good. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm worried that if it's not received well, it will just be another streaming show. I'm worried about that.
I watched Matt Bone, our friend Matt Bone's breakdown of the trailer on his YouTube channel, Damcasters. And he joined us for Red Tails this year as well. If you haven't listened to that, check that one out too. And he broke it down and he talked a little bit about thinking that the CGI didn't look as good as it could have done.
Mm.
And he thinks perhaps it's because it's compressed for YouTube and Twitter and social media stuff. So hopefully, because some of that's, it looked good, but some of it
Yeah, we could be seeing trailer renders for all we know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you know, and there's
some
pressure.
Interesting edits with that trailer too, like cutting the Tuskegee guy in the cockpit.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be a lot more wide covering than maybe the book did.
We might get an Italy episode, and I think there's a shot of them in the desert as well. So So I think they're going to try and be a little bit expansive with it, as you say, and I think it might be interesting.
Will Butler sound like Elvis, though? That's the big...
No, I don't think he will, because he talks in the trailer, and it's fine. It doesn't do the...
We're going to go in the sky, this old B-17, give it some welly, boys.
It's like he's in the room.
Baby. Open them Bombay doors, baby.
Imagine if he had done it like that. That would have been great.
That would have been amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that looks like it's going to be our February. Our February's going to be locked out with a bit of...
Working damn hard behind the scenes to try and get us a screener, but Apple are hard to contact. So, you know, we might have to wait like everyone else. Yeah. But you never know. You never know. Keep your ears peeled.
If anyone from Apple is listening right now...
Please. Production companies have trusted us with properties before.
They have.
We're very good boys. So getting back to the cast, finishing us off this week, because to be fair, it's one of those movies where there's a lot of people in it, but there ain't really a lot of roles, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is just the key players, people that you're with all the time. So we have J. Kenneth Campbell playing Flint Lucas. He's your big bad. He's the terrorist of the week, if you will.
He is.
He's had some interesting credits. He was in Bar Bar Black Sheep, the American flying series, World War II flying series. So it's a nice little cannon off Masters of the Air there. That was also called Flying Misfits in some regions. He was also in War and Remembrance, that American TV epic from back in the day.
Yeah, they did Mars a few Attacks. Of those, didn't they?
Yeah, Mars Attacks. I know Matt likes that one. Movie scared the shit out of me when I was little, I've got to admit.
Sharks in it?
No, it's not. But the alien heads were scary for some reason. And then when the woman gets on that dog, and like the dog
that's
head,
a bit weird. Yeah,
that was a bit creepy. Yeah, and I didn't understand.
Tom Jones's greatest work.
Yeah, I didn't understand when I was young that it's a spoof of 50s cinema. Yeah. So like, it's one of them films you go reappraise when you're old, and you're like, oh no, I get it now. I get it why it's like it is. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And he was Kenneth Campbell was also in Walker, Texas Ranger and Collateral Damage with Arnie. Yeah, so quite a good cast again. You know, these movies aren't, you know, they're not going to have the big hitters really. They're, you know, they're not those kind of movies. I think the budget would be absolutely tanked if you got anyone in who was a huge name. But this one's big name, I guess, is Dale Dye. He's the Hal Holbrook of this one, I guess.
He is, yeah.
And he's darn good in it. He's Dale Dye. You know, he's doing Dale.
He's bringing classic Dale energy to it, and I love it. I'm here for it.
More on Dale later. So this week, we don't have any one-word reviews because we didn't know that Mike wouldn't be joining us until very close to release. So we didn't put out a one-word review because we were sorting things out behind the scenes. Anyway, I found a retro review from TV Guide from April 98, and it's not kind. It follows as this. Despite a procession of violent set twos, Operation Delta Force 2 emerges as a sluggish action pick with only the Special Forces team concept in common with its predecessor. Bone crusher flicks like this one need a star figure in firm command, but top billed Michael Grady makes no more of an impression than several of his supporting players. Aside from the scripting detritus, this action-packed time waster sprawls over so many international settings that the viewers will be unsure of where they are at any given time. Although glint-eyed J. Kenneth Campbell enjoys quoting Poe while promising nuclear catastrophes, his co-stars appear to have matriculated at the I'll just collect my Praytech branch of the Actors Studio. They lack the wherewithal to elevate this above the level of a standard adventure tale. TV Guide with waking up on the wrong side of the bed. Who pissed in their chips? Jesus. Like that's a scather, isn't it?
It is. It is fair to say that a lot of the supporting cast don't have a lot to do.
No, they don't. But that's not their fault, though, is it?
In terms of the script. Yeah.
You know, there is issues with this one. And that it tries to do what last week didn't. Well, like, so if you've listened to the Operation Delta Force 1 episode, or you've watched it in preparation for this one, or you've seen it already, Sam says it needed to be 50% action, 50% story, where Operation Delta Force 1 is, he reckoned it's probably like 70, 60% action. And there's not as much story.
But it works.
This, yeah, it works. But this one does that 50-50. But it doesn't do either one well, in a way.
Yeah, there's something lacking with this one. And I'm sure that's final thoughts territory, but...
It is, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think maybe we should get onto the Ally Tally, because boy howdy, do we have an Ally Tally this week.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It's time for Ally Tally on Fighting on Film.
Mike's goatee.
It's very 90s, isn't it? It's very. I think my dad had one like that too in the late 90s. I think it was the thing, wasn't it?
Love it. I really liked the upside down M16 minigun from the opening sequence. That was fun.
Me and Matt watched this pretty much at the same time, and on the WhatsApp we were messaging furiously, and I was like, is that a braider inside that? Like, what is that? And then we finally worked out it's a gun turned upside down with like a mini gun built around it.
Yeah. So the
computer joystick on the top.
It had a Betamag on top.
That's it.
And then like a receiver body faked over it.
With a barrel in the middle.
Top.
Yeah.
And then it had a single barrel that was firing, and then it had an independent set of barrels that were like matte chromed,
rotating,
spinning. Yeah,
yeah.
And I like
prop
that.
Work. I've got to admit,
yeah, like that's it exactly.
The weird thing isn't really the minigun. The weird thing is that it's in a random entrenched position at an Iraqi army command post.
Yeah, the Iraqi National Guard, you know,
that's it.
Republican Guard, rather.
Republican Guard.
Well known for their ground use of miniguns.
It's great. Like, because this is after, obviously, Operation Desert Storm. So I assume that's why they chose the Iraqis to be the sort of kicking off that bit. They're rescuing pilots, downed pilots, weren't they?
Yeah.
So I assumed it was a Desert Storm thing, but you don't learn anything about why they're there. They're just there.
Either that, or they kind of like predicted Operation Iraqi Freedom by about 6 years.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Although we're never quite sure when these movies are set, are we? Like,
no,
we assume
true.
They're set now, but they could be set in the late 80s. It's hard to work it out. But I do think it's probably set in 96, 97.
Yeah. I always get the feeling with these films that you'd be assuming too much if you thought like
we're giving it a lot of flowers here, really, aren't we?
I know that when they hide it's six months later.
That's it,
because it says it on screen. So the 6 months between the Iraqi mission,
oh my god,
and the hijacking of the submarine and cruise ship,
that's nuts to say, isn't it?
Yeah. This film is crazy.
It's all over.
Last week we were talking about how that film had everything.
Yes.
But this film, it feels like they watched a mix between Under Siege, Hunt for Red October, and Speed 2, and we're like, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
I'll have some of that.
This one leans into the mockbuster genre a bit more than Delta Force 1 did. I mean, for me, I had that minigun picked out there, but the custom M4 carbines XM177s are back.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to have like a a customer.
It's that one with the foregrip, that's like the Thompson style foregrip.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It's the same armor as in a lot of the same guns from the first film, obviously.
Yeah, it must be. Interestingly, though, no military advisory is in the credits for this one.
No, so I wonder if Dale had anything to do with it.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Maybe he might have, yeah. That's interesting.
It's not listed on the Warriors. It's not listed on the Warriors Inc. Site. So
interesting. Mm. Interesting. There's some Vectors mocked up to look like AK-74s, which is quite nice. That's a South African. Are they based on a Galil, the Vector?
Yeah, Galil AK derivative kind of thing. Yeah,
and you can always tell if it's a mock up. Robbie's Vector mock up corner, where you can see the receiver of the gun is angled and it goes into where the handguard should be. Because the AK handguards are quite fat, that the AK handguard hangs over that angle. So it looks a bit weird. It's quite blocky and jagged to look at. You can always tell.
And they also have a straight front sight post as well.
That's it. Yeah. They're decent mock-ups though. Someone's found AK-74 like muzzle brakes and they've put them on, which is quite cool. They do look nice. The bad guy's running around with like a Galil for the folded magazine, firing it off in a control room of a nuclear sub. Things you shouldn't do.
Things you should not do in the pressure vessel of a nuclear submarine.
Yeah. Fire just guns full, chaps down.
Full bore 7.62 rounds.
Yeah, yeah. There's some other baddies running around with micro Uzis, which are cool. You don't usually see those.
Yeah.
Very 90s.
The baddie on the ship, like the sub baddie that leads the hijacking.
The Johnny Cash looking bloke.
The South African Johnny Cash guy. He's got like a chromed revolver,
that's cool.
Like a 7-inch barrel on it.
They've got good baddie guns. Some of them have. There's a bit where they take over the dining room of the ship they want to extract Dale Dye from, and the waiters all like get their guns out, and they've all got. It's a very like sort of action TV show style where they all get them out in like slow mo, and one guy's got like a Thompson, another guy's got a Walther MP. So it really must be the same armorer because these are the same weapons. But in terms of other Ali Tally bits. There's a really cool use of a flare gun, trying to be this weird underwater pistol.
Oh yeah, it's like a standing in for an HKP-8, kind of bit. Yeah, that's quite cool.
And there's an underwater sea battle, which I do like. There is. That's so weird.
A little bit Bond-esque.
Yeah.
There's a grease gun. MP comes back in the henchman arsenal.
There's a sequence where one of those extras is meant to be firing a micro Uzi and the sound is playing, but he's just juddering the gun around and nothing's happening. So they must have just said, no, you're not weapons trained. You can just hold it.
we haven't got any more ammo for you, mate. Sorry.
No.
There's lots of nice blank firing going on. There's some good bits where Mike and the boys are like blatting and you can see the spent casings falling out
and ejected
in and stuff. That's quite good. One of the US admirals is wearing like Russian epaulettes.
Yeah.
Pentagon.
It's funny.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
They've got the fucking world's fattest 90s telly. You know?
Ooh.
The ones you'd have to take the fucking wall out to get them in.
Absolute like them Gucci boys. TV for 1996.
Yeah. Big like 52 inch.
Can you imagine
square.
Setting that bad boy up with a PS1 and a light gun?
Oh, point blank on that. Oh.
Yeah. Time crisis.
Did you ever used to hold the gun in one hand and get your trigger finger and like jag it
of course.
Back and forth to get the
My favorite light gun game is actually the Die Hard trilogy game.
Oh really? Oh okay.
And I love Time Crisis, but the Die Hard trilogy game there was a really gash like taxi driving sequence from Die Hard 3.
Yeah,
which was a terrible driving level. Then there was a top down sort almost isometric one where you're in the Nakatomi Tower and you have to like clear various levels. And that's a fun level. But then the best one was the light gun level or the light gun part of the game where it's Die Hard 2, where they're in the airport. And you have to clear the airport with the light gun. And it's so such a good game.
90s gaming just hits different, doesn't it?
And and you know, I'm sure once the hostage situation was sorted out and everything. The admirals and the generals at the Pentagon pulled out the PS1 and plugged in.
Def did.
You've got the light going out and had a good black on the big CRT.
Yeah. Defo. I've got the new NASCAR racing game, guys. Come on. Got F1. where the engine sounds like bees. You think
I've got the new Porsche Need for Speed game, boys. Let's whack this on.
I've rented Crash Bandicoot. The last copy they had. Come on. Ooga booga.
Have you boys ever played Overboard? It's a pirate game.
Have you lads played SSX Tricky? Come on. Amazing. No, but it was amazing to see that. And the quality of picture they got off that 90s telly, I was amazed.
Oh my God. The proto zoom chats they have. And really Mike's great. Character is like stood in like Manila or wherever the hell it's supposed to be. On like in front of a podium, which has got an embedded CRT TV.
Yeah.
And then a big camera at the top, and he's like chatting away, and it is literally a Zoom meeting.
It's so clever. I love it. Insane. I love stuff like that. I love when movies predate what we have. Like, I know that video calls have been a thing, but like, I love it when movies do that. And they made it look so easy as well. Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
We have more trouble setting up Zoom than he did.
I think we do, yeah. In terms of vehicles, there's BMPs this week. The MI8 helicopters are back, probably the same ones, I assume. There's a speedboat sequence, which is a little bit "The World Is Not Enough," or is it "World Is Not Enough" with the boat chase at the start?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, was it Die Another Day? I can't remember.
Is it Tomorrow Never Dies?
No,
I think it is "World Is Not Enough." The World's one in London. Enough.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
yeah, that's Tomorrow Never. That's "World Is Not Enough."
Okay, cool. Yeah, we've got to get our bonds right.
We've had some tangents this week, holy.
The spyhards lads will have our skin if we don't get it right.
That is true.
But no, they're cool. They're like little black sort of like, you know, speedboaty type things.
Yeah.
There's Hercules in there, bringing them in.
Yeah.
Is it Hercules? Yeah. Can't remember.
No buggies this week.
No buggies this week, no.
No trains.
Couldn't quite fit them in, but they're submarines.
But there's
boy, there be subs. And there is one line.
What a sub it is as well. What a choice.
It's the Kursk, ladies and gentlemen. The Kursk submarine. That Kursk.
Yeah.
You know, the one that took a nap at the bottom of the ocean for a bit. I might cut that out. You know, the one that sunk.
Do you know there's 20 ships in that class and they could have picked any of them?
Yeah, exactly. They picked that one.
They picked the Kursk 4 years before it sank in 2000.
And there's a line that has aged like absolute milk, aged like milk, where they're trying to take the sub. The big bad turns to one of his, you know, henchmen, and he goes, "This way the Kursk will be remembered forever." And I couldn't quite believe it. It's one of the all-time great movie lines that were just aged like milk. I couldn't quite believe it.
Wow. I know.
It was incredible.
I couldn't believe it.
Incredible. No. Oh dear. Anyway, moving swiftly on to favourite scenes.
Hello, I'm Al Murray, and you're listening to Fighting on Film, the world's number one war film podcast.
Any scene with Dalen?
Is that it for you this week? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. But any scene with Dalen, I just wanted him to be a bit more action. I wanted him to. I said to Rob was when we were watching it, I was like, oh God, I hope he diehards this. And it's just Dale holding out on the cruise ship, waiting for
but then they don't do it.
Mike and the boys to come and save him.
Yeah, it's annoying.
He's there, like in the ducts with a captured vector, just dropping the one-liners.
It would have been amazing.
That would have been amazing. Great.
Yeah. Dale is great in it. That Dale brings a level of seriousness to the movie that I think it really needed. So
yeah, he gives it a bit of gravitas, doesn't he?
Yeah, because the plot. It's hard to talk about favorite scenes without going into final thoughts to explain it, but the terrorist motivation is very convoluted. So I've watched it twice now, and you're never quite sure why they're doing what they're doing.
He's just holding everyone to ransom.
He's just holding everyone
billions
to ransom.
Of dollars, I think.
Yeah, like classic sort of trope stuff. But he wants to nuke not only Los Angeles but Moscow and St. Petersburg at the same time.
Why not? Why not?
I know, right? Go for a hat trick if you can.
Yeah.
It's just a bit convoluted. You're never quite sure what, why, or who he is. Like, why is this? Who is this guy? Sort of thing. It's just like a big bad, I guess. No, but I did. You're right. I did want Dale to at least gun someone down once. Like, it would have been nice to see.
He does eventually get a little bit of that going on, where he picks up one of the AKs, but he doesn't. Never has that moment. Quite.
No,
they robbed our boy.
It's a shame. We were so looking forward to that, weren't we? The minute I mentioned Dale was in this one, me and Matt were like, "Ooh, we're going to get some Dale action." You don't quite get it, but no, he does. He does add some gravitas to this one.
I think Dale could have easily been the lead in this and carried this film.
Could have, yeah, yeah.
Really? Actually, because he's great. He is a good actor, and he's
in it a lot though.
He pulls it off really well in the film, because he has a convoluted character where he's... So this is a bit of the Operation Delta Force lore coming in, where Skip Lang's brother Peter joined the Special Forces and was killed on a mish at some point. And Daddy Lang, Dale.
Daddy Dale.
Daddy Lang.
Daddy Lang,
and Daddy Lang is retired from the Navy. He was one of the U.S. Navy's premier nuclear submarine captains.
Yeah,
and he's retired to captain a cruise ship,
the North Star,
because he can't face being in the military anymore now that one of his sons has died, and sadly Skip and Daddy Lang don't talk.
No, they don't.
And there's a very brief scene where Mike has to do some work acting on board the Hercules, which is taking them, and he explains the backstory of his family very briefly. They are given absolutely nothing to do in this film.
I know.
So few scenes where they're talking or delivering context or a monologue.
It's so annoying. It's just like their job is literally to turn up and shoot everyone. Like, it's they don't do anything else. It's really annoying. Like, you get it, that's right. That Hercules sequence almost gives them some backstory, almost gives them some character development, but then it doesn't quite do it. Like, it's a bit annoying. And then there's one section where one guy's wearing like a 173rd Airborne vest, and you're like, oh, cool. Is he going to mention that he was a paratrooper? We're going to get a bit of, because as I assume at one point, all these movies were meant to have the same team going through.
Yeah.
So I assume there's things they planned to have.
If they thought that far ahead, yeah.
Yeah, but you'd think you would have the same people. Like, it feels like it, because it's Skip Lang coming over again. So it feels like it's...
You could have just had a different Delta Force team every time.
You could have, yeah. Yeah. Because it feels like this is the only Delta Force team that are around. Because there's a section where they go... They're the only team that are operating in the area. And I was like, Delta Team's not just five blokes. Like, there's a whole heap of them. And like, it's like the SAS. You know, there's more than just one of them, you know. it's a bit weird.
What was your favourite scene?
My favourite scene, much like last week, it's the opening set piece. Because I love Balls to the Wall again. Like, it's just unashamedly an action set piece where
pasting the entire Iraqi army.
Yeah, exactly. No, taking on the entire Republican Guard brigade. Finishing them off, like proper finishing off these lads. Rescuing the downed airmen. But that could have been a movie in itself. Like that would have been a very missing in action esque, Rambo 2 esque plot line. Mm. Anyway, that would have been quite strong.
Yeah,
Hot Shots 2. Yeah, again. But it's just fun, like, you know, the explosions.
Yeah, they all have G3s and stuff. And
Like, we've got vectors. It's quite nice, you know. It was a well done set piece.
I liked the trench clearing. I liked the single shot in the 50 caliber, the minigun,
blowing up God knows what with M203
that
grenade.
BTR that looked wrong with its weird,
with a big
like
fat turret,
dunce cap turret on it.
But it's good. It's just there's just a lot going on. There's a lot of money thrown at that section.
Yeah, Mike's,
again,
Mike's 203 was OP. Like, it was blowing everything up.
It's like the pistol from Halo 2. It's killing everything. But I also really
it's like the M16 from that level on their Die Hard trilogy when you get the light gun.
what a callback! What a callback! but I also really enjoyed, because I wasn't expecting it, and it blew my socks off when I saw it, was the underwater fight sequence with the James Bond red suited Soviet scuba divers who come. So it's absurd, because at this part of the movie, and where the scuba diving happens, they're trying to break into this. This is crazy. It's like a bit like, this film's a bit like Shout of the Devil, where there's just so much going on.
So the nuclear submarine goes and stops a Russian naval base, which is, I don't know why they stop, but they do. Where's the cruise ship go while they're stopping there?
You never find out.
I assume they diverted
it away, maybe.
Maybe. Anyway, they stopped there to like load some missiles. But why didn't they have missiles on board in the first place?
Oh, they shot them all off, didn't they, when they were fighting the Russian sub that came to get them? Surely.
Yeah, but no, they load missiles into like the vertical launch tubes.
Oh, right.
Torpedo tubes.
Maybe the Kursk didn't have any vertical rockets that day. I don't know.
I guess not. Like, we're fresh out of ICBMs. We best go and get some.
Weird. Those things we've never shot in anger yet.
Yeah.
But then they go to
that naval base, and they have to like follow them there. Carry on.
Yeah, so they're trying to infiltrate in their speedboats, and they find a mine wall, like mines on chicken wire, you know. A wall of mines or whatever they call. What's it called? Mine net? I don't know.
It's a net. It's like an anti-submarine net or an
anti-submarine defense. That's it.
Yeah. Basically, it's a metal net fence thing that they've put, and then they've attached little boxes to it to make it look like it's got mines on it.
That's it. So Matt quite funnily said to me when we were watching it, they could just float over these. Like it's not gonna stop anyone. But anyway, so they send the Delta Force guys in to go and disable them. And when they're doing it, these out of the mist come these Soviet scuba divers in their red suits, and they have like a bit of a punch up underwater.
They must have knocked the sensors on the anti-submarine net.
Quite possibly. Yeah.
It reminded me
of the underwater fight from Top Secret. It's a little bit like that.
it had that vibe. Yeah,
like it tries to do a lot, and I appreciate
put them in two different colours of wetsuit so you can differentiate.
Definitely,
very Bond, very Bond movie.
Yeah, with lemon piping to quote Alan Partridge. Like it's just madcap, and I just appreciate everything this movie's trying to do. It might not necessarily work all of the time.
Yeah,
but it is trying. And there's just
actually thinking about it, my favourite scene is when the cruise ship is first hijacked, and they're all in like the cruise ship's restaurant with Captain Lang's wife and daughter, having a nice lunch. He's not there. He's on the bridge. He's working. Dale's busy.
He's got no time for that rubbish.
No. He was going to meet them there, but he had to do some errands before he. So he could be on the bridge to say Mayday, Mayday.
I've got to read the script for Saving Private Ryan. A new project comes through.
I got notes to make. So essentially, like,
practice my Brecon point.
I didn't even twig it at first, because I'm there watching, just enjoying the sequence and the mise-en-scène of the film and the riveting dialogue they're having.
Sorry, that was a low blow.
And I didn't even notice that all of the waiters and the busboys look sus.
If you watch that scene again, they do look really suspect, don't they?
Yeah. And my favorite part of that entire scene is when there's a little four piece band, like a quartet, a string quartet playing.
It's very under siege.
In the corner. And there's a point where it pans to them and the music starts to skip, and it pans to a CD player, like a tiny little like CD hi-fi that you would have gotten from like
Rumbelows. trying to keep the 90s theme going. Comic.
You would have got from Dixon's.
Banging Olufsen.
Yeah, right. Ooh, pricey.
All right.
So it starts to skip and it pans to it, and the audience, like, not the audience, the restaurant goers kind of like, they're confused and then laugh. And you're like, yeah. Why are you laughing? You're, like, the band's fake.
My violin's skipping.
And then they all just pull weapons and blast.
Yeah, they don't fuck about, do they? Yeah.
No.
And then there's a great scene where an old boy tries to attack the attack them with a butter knife, which was just hilarious.
He was apparently in a lot of those movies. He's like...
Oh, right.
From I'd look on his IMDb page, and he's in like a lot of those cult movies that that Yossi and Sam did and stuff.
Like a little trope, little cliche there.
Yeah. I think his name was Hiram.
Director film, stamp, wasn't it? Perhaps. Yeah. It's cool. It's nice.
It's an interesting little bit because he's like a Holocaust survivor, and he's got they kind of pan across his number tattoo on his wrist, and he picks up like a bread knife, and he's like repeating never again. He walks towards him, and then they light him up, and it's like,
I wanted him to get a stab in at least. I was like, come on, let him go down in a blaze of glory.
Right.
That sequence for me just felt like the start of like a Magnum PI or an Equalizer. Like it felt very TV.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, like classic bottle episode where they just want to keep the action in like one room. It felt like.
Yeah.
I wish they'd ran with that a bit more. So then you might have had like the hostage stuff at the top and then you've got the submarine stuff at the bottom. If they'd have ran with that a bit more.
Yeah, you get a couple of more scenes with the wife and daughter.
Yeah.
Chatting. There's like 30 seconds max of that.
Yeah.
And then there's the greatest CGI helicopter assault I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Green screen.
Yeah.
Blue screen. So
they come in it green screens them over like some footage of the
ship.
Let's pause here and just salute the number of establishing shots external of the cruise ship.
Definitely padding out the hour 47.
Like, you've cut to like a little scene on the submarine, and then they cut to like a little scene back on the cruise ship. But there has to be an establishing shot.
You have to know where you are.
If we cut to that restaurant, we'll never know that it's on the ship.
Where are they? We'd never know. 10 seconds. Where are they? Yeah.
We'd never know that the bridge of the ship looks like that if we didn't see an external shot of the.
I assume it costs a lot of money to rent.
What they've done is they've paid. Yeah. For a helicopter to do a load of like long shots and externals of the cruise ship, and they're like, we've got at least 8 minutes of these. We need to get many of them in so we can justify it in the budget as possible.
I couldn't look it up, but I wonder if that cruise line gave them the ship for nothing. And like, well, if you use loads of shots of the ship for promo,
maybe
then you can have it. Like, you can have it, use it.
Dale's there, like. Sunset Cruises are a great employer. I've always enjoyed being a member of the crew. We never have issues with terrorists in reality.
What a way to have a good time. definitely that, isn't it? Very competitive rates. Terrorists.
It's like the Alan Partridge Yuletide special where he's got a sponsorship deal with Rover.
Oh, yeah. Well, that drinks company he keeps mentioning, Sprunk, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah. Like, it is a little bit like that. But I think we're getting into final thoughts now.
As always.
For me, like I mentioned it earlier, like the movie's fun. These movies are fun. That's why we picked to do them.
Mm.
And it's still quite enjoyable. But I think if I'm putting my critical hat on, the first one's enjoyable in a way that you can literally just sit there, absorb it, and you don't have to do too much thinking. I found myself like just sort of wandering to my phone in the second half, checking Twitter and things, because I was like, nothing's happening that's of any importance. I feel like the second half...
Oh, another set piece.
Yeah, another set piece. It felt a bit flat for me. And they steal us, as you've mentioned, they steal us of that Dale died like having an action moment, which I didn't like. And then just because the terrorist plot is so convoluted and there's so much like chopping to one location
to another.
And
he doesn't bring it, does he?
No, he's doing like this weird Shakespearean quoting poetry
stuff.
And
he's like, not terrible in the role.
No. He comes across as menacing. Bully.
And then he falls from a catwalk.
I knew you were going to mention this.
He falls from a catwalk, face Touché. Plants into a deck, and then 10 minutes later he gets up again.
Yeah.
And there's a sequence where I'm like, ooh, because Dale has this line where he goes, we need to defend this console.
That's it.
And then nothing happens about the console. I'm like, I thought we were going to have like a little shootout and Dale was going to like blat and stuff, but no. Yeah.
like get a father and son moment. Shoot the terrorist
like
together.
Them,
like
both of them like mag dumping into the terrorist. Yeah, yeah.
Give me another mag, Skip. You know, that would have been good.
Dale slamming another mag into his back.
I love you, Dad. Like racking another magazine at M16.
Some fathers teach their son to play catch, but I taught my son how to use the M16 American battle rifle.
It would have been a great line. But no, it does just fall a little bit flat, this one. Like it had promise, but by the end I was like, can we just kill the terrorist and wrap it up now, please?
Right. The fact that a lot of the scenes are set in the control room of the Kursk. What a sense I never thought I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
They did that classic thing where they spent not enough on the on the set, and it just looks a bit naff.
Yeah.
It's too roomy. That's the thing that these films always get wrong.
Yeah.
It's too roomy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Battle of the River Plate, where all the battleships are like someone's front room. They're just huge. And it just has the same energy as that, where I'm like, I'm clearly not in a ship. But obviously we're not rivet countering that. Like it looked okay.
Yeah,
I get where you're coming from. I'm going to say it and it's going to sound weird. It's too unbelievable. Like, I want to have a little bit of believability in my terrorist actions. Like, last week, threatening to sort of spread the Ebola virus around is plausible enough.
The film ends where they... it's so stupid. The film ends where the Soviet captain of the... Not the Soviet, the Russian captain, I should say, of the submarine is freed, and him and Dale have this little sequence where they outwit another Russian submarine.
That's done quite well,
which is quite nice. That's a good little sequence. And Dale's giving it all the terminology, and it's like, ooh, nice.
Yeah.
But he brings out like a tray of vodka shots.
Yeah,
just as a shot.
I drink a bottle of Stolichkov, whatever it's
Stolly,
called.
Yeah.
Stolly, yeah.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
I mean, the film still delivers that action. It's got Dale die.
Yeah,
it's not terrible. I've seen far worse films.
Yeah, we've seen some.
I wouldn't watch it again, but I've seen.
No, I'd never visit it again. I don't think it's a very one and done movie. But you know, Operation Delta Force doesn't stop. We keep going. Next week we're back with Operation Delta Force 3: Clear Target. So we hope you'll join us again for that one.
I'm sure they can't wait for that one.
Everyone's gagging. I wonder what the Foff boys think of the third one. See, right. Franchise fatigue didn't seep in this early to Dirty Dozen December.
No, it didn't actually.
But it's coming in early with Operation Delta Force. Interesting, isn't it?
If 3 is on the same level as 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be okay.
But if there's a
clear trajectory of it dropping off, we've got a long way to go to get to 5.
Oh, we have. Oh, we're gonna feel it.
Anyway,
Christmas
stick with us to find out
enough.
How long we last with this. I think we'll get all the way through to all 5.
Oh, we will. We're consummate professional
filmmakers. Rob will hold me at gunpoint if we don't.
Get that movie on, Matt. Get it on. You're contractually
obliged.
At
least this film had a nice MP5 SD sequence where he cleared a trench with it.
Yeah, exactly. That was really nice. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, do join us again next week for Operation Dirt Force 3. Share the movie around. You know, we're having a bit of fun this December. You can catch up on the show at fightingonfilm.com. We're just hit 160 episodes, so there's plenty in that back catalogue for you to enjoy. And do go and listen to the Del Dye episode if you haven't yet. That is a real Christmas cracker.
We don't talk about this film for some reason, but it's a great episode.
We omitted this one, mainly because we didn't know he was in it. Anyway.
I honestly didn't know these films existed until you suggested this. But
the reason is I bought
all
it from
on, it's all on Rob, everybody. It's all
you
on
can
Rob.
Get, you can get the all four of them for CEX for a pound. So,
wow.
You know.
But then you won't have 5.
No, it's annoying, isn't it? I know.
I couldn't do that. I couldn't have 4 of them and know that there's another
and
out there.
They don't even
have
included. Like, they don't even have like disc art. It's just it just says Operation Delta Force 1, Operation Delta Force 2. It's like the cheapest like conversioning of a movie to DVD I've ever seen.
Okay, so by the end of this month, we will be launching the Operation Delta Force Steelbook campaign, demanding that all five remastered films are released on Steelbook.
We need to get one of them companies.
Crisp Blu-ray releases.
Featuring exclusive interview with Sam Furstenberger for the first one.
Do it. Like, I mean, if Millennium Films or whoever's like putting them out on YouTube wants us to do this, I will interview, we will give you our interview with Sam, and we will interview Dale Dye. We will get Mike on.
We will get so many people.
We will do the special features.
Yeah.
For the cruise ship Operation Delta Force Steelbook.
That cruise ship will never look better in crispy 4K.
Crisp North Star. All those Extel cutaway like pan shots of the ship at sea. Be worth it just for that.
Amazing, that would be amazing. Anyway, if you listen this far, thanks very much for listening. Do come again. Do join us next week for the next instalment of Operation Delta Force December. And of course, Merry Christmas from us all at Fighting on Film. Until next week, folks. Bye bye.
Merry Christmas. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.